So, about that Yukiner out, that was some pretty boring stuff, huh? Yeah? Right?
Oi, Kizama. The hell are you saying about the Yukiner route? Pepe! Tabanda! Listen here, you little shit. The Yukiner route was fantastic. What part of that could have possibly bored you? It was the most peaceful, wonderful route in the entire game. And coming out of Tomoe route, where I was genuinely bored at some points and some of the gags got old pretty quickly, this route was refreshing, it was fun, it was full of interesting thoughts and...
I think it was one of those people that thought he liked the anime version.
Yeah.
Please don't hurt me. Pepe Coffee is ready. Have some.
With that said, welcome everybody once again to the Clannad Book Club podcast. We're here with the Yukide route, and... what a route it was. It was, seems, aside from Pepe thinking it's boring, there seems to be a general consensus that this was a very good route.
That's not the right way to word it, but okay.
That's what you said. You said it was
that's
boring.
That's how you worded it, Pepe.
That is what I said. Okay, anyway.
Pepe's like, now, let's not get hasty.
Joining us today, we have special guest Nashes, and today he's joining us to present the 30-second recap of this route. Take it away, Nashes.
On this episode of 2121 Hunters, Tomoya finds the elusive hidden lolly. Despite Sunohara's advances, Yukine falls for Tomoya, who just so happens to remind everyone of her dead brother. Tomoya discovers the true joy of being used as a lap pillow, and Yukine's delinquent friends turn out to be aspiring voyeurs, going so far as to hide inside the very room to get that perfect angle. No story is complete without the long-sought-after Amuraisu Nanadesu, and Yukine invites Tomoya to her brother's remembrance so that they can make out in front of everyone in front of his grave. A beacon of hope descends from the heavens and infuses Tomoya with the happiness of the lolly, and the gang return to the reference room for some delicious coffee.
Amuraisu Nanadesu!
10 out of 10!
Very good. Oh, that was very good, yeah.
Excellently written.
Oh yeah, you can tell that I definitely fucking wrote that one.
I lost it at the when you said the perfect trying to get the perfect angle. That was really good. Yeah,
I was holding back my laughter the entire time. Holy crap, that was good.
Fit it right in at 30 seconds.
Why a lolly though? You guys know a lolly.
She kinda is. She's really small.
She's tiny, she's not a lolly.
I wasn't really going to go that way until the whole Amrice thing happened. I'm like, you know what? Fuck it.
Okay. No. Extended Ayumi reference.
Okay, compared to every other, you know, girl, Fuko notwithstanding, because, I mean, come on. Fuko. That's too easy.
Yeah.
With all that said, what do you think of the root meshes?
I don't know. The Yukine route is one that... I mean, I read Clannad several years back, but it's been a long time. And then I watched the anime, and... I mean, the Yukine route is definitely different from most of your other routes. A lot of your other routes have got definite, you know, they set up... You know, you're gonna get in with this character, there's gonna be some kind of a conflict or turmoil, or something's going to happen, and then there's kind of a resolution. Whereas the Yukine route is just more or less this nice, calming, peaceful... existence, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
I mean, Tomoya and Sunohara just kind of start going into this daily routine of we're going to go into the reference room and we're going to have coffee and we're going to chill and we're just going to kind of, you know, kick back and enjoy being here, finding somewhere that they can kind of call home. And, you know, it's definitely different, but it's not necessarily bad.
Most of the time it's Sunohara who's the one who pulls him into the reference room.
Yeah, Sunohara is definitely drawn there too. It's just like how the game kind of draws you into the reference room. It's much like the route
there's
itself.
There's so much, like, kind of meta crazy shit with this route and, like, how the reader and Tomoya are, like, the same existence. Mm. Like, you get drawn into the reference room just like he does. The being in the reference room is relaxing as opposed to all the other routes that are, like, really intense.
Like, we called Misai and Tomoya routes unconventional, but this route is fucking... really unconventional.
Yeah.
I'll admit that. You know, there's an absence of any sort of real conflict. So it kind of, like, breaks away from the typical structure of a key.
I would say otherwise, but it's not like an absurd conflict. Like, it's actually very basic and real.
Very
so,
minor.
Like, whenever you look at it, it's not like, it's not something that you look at and you're like, oh man, that was so intense. It's more like, yeah, that's life, you know?
Well, the main conflict I got out of it, in the present tense, is Tomoya and his feelings for Yukine. It's like, oh, am I really a person for her brother? And that kind of conflict for him.
It definitely took a backseat to everything else. Like, comparing it to the Tomoyo route, which we just finished, like, the conflict was also about Tomoyo and his feelings and how he should deal with those feelings. But that was Tomoyo's a very feelings? Big focus. Oh, Tomoya.
No, Tomoyo had feelings for her. did nobody else think about the idea of empathy being tiring? Being a thematic piece?
Empathy being tiring.
Because, like...
Yeah,
for Yukine, yeah.
Like, with Yukine, like, there's, like, the whole scene where Tomoya's talking about how nobody's really supporting her whenever she's, like, supporting everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps making the constant statement of saying, you know, you look tired, and she's fucking sleeping, like, every day in the room. Like, she sleeps on his lap and stuff because she finally gets some damn rest. So, like, I thought that was a very important thing because, I mean, hey, we all get really empathetic and it bums us out, you know, whenever you try to do everything that you can for people and, like, it's tiring. You can only really roll with the punches for so long. Like, you're going to get bogged down and you're gonna have to feel all that shit that you're taking eventually. So, you know, you need to get some rest.
It's very realistic because even though you genuinely enjoy helping other people out, it definitely gets tiring. It definitely gets stressful. No matter how much you enjoy whatever you're doing, you will get tired and you will need someone to help, you know, easier to relax you.
It's not a unique theme. It's not a unique theme to, you know, take the, you know, hey, you got to look out for yourself kind of route because we've seen it before already in this visual novel so far, but it's a little bit more realistic in this sense, and I really enjoyed that. It definitely just fits with the atmosphere.
Yeah, true.
Of Yukine being a good person, but she's not, you know, a superhero. You know, she gotta have.
Yeah, it goes to the idea that everyone needs support, and like different people give different kinds of support to each other.
I think that's the whole point of many of the interactions, and that's what Tomoya does best by. You know, just listening to them and just being there is good enough to support them, especially for Yukine and for Misae, and even for Tomoyo, from what we've read so far.
I think it's super important in this route, as opposed to the anime take, where it's Tomoyo being, oh, I gotta be super awesome, cool guy, and, you know, do things myself, and I'm gonna take this into my own hands. It's different, because this Tomoya is very reserved, and he's just kind of... like a silent observer of sorts, where he's just kind of there, and like they have this relationship that grows with them just kind of hanging out and enjoying each other's company, and he kind of figures things out in a really natural development kind of way, and it fits really well. It's very realistic. It's good writing. It's very, very important that a lot of this is not forced. It's very smooth, and it's still not necessarily a super long route, but it's just good. I don't know. It works really nice.
Pretty good length.
Yeah, kind of segueing into that whole empathy is tiring and trying to find someone to be supportive. I mean, you think about, you know, we look at things from the perspective of Tomoya's daily life, where, you know, he's just kind of going into the, you know, the reference room, and this is like a constant. I mean, she's there, she's waiting for anyone to show up, but whenever you kind of switch things and look from her perspective, that's just while she's at school. I mean, she's in the reference room waiting. Anyone can come in there, talk to her, discuss their issues. But then she's going, you know, home in the evenings, and from, you know, kind of some of the conversations you get, I mean, she's going back and, you know, doing things with some of her, you know, her brother's old friends, the people that she now considers her friends, and, you know, being there for them. So, I mean, she's going home and helping people and then just kind of coming back straight back to school, and it's just waiting for people to come to her with issues. So Tomoya showing up and kind of becoming this person that she can rely on somewhat is finally giving, you know, her someone that she can go to, whereas she's been helping everybody else for so long.
He's not even asking for anything by being there. He just comes in and hangs out. It's just, they're just hanging out.
Despite Tomoya having issues of his own, he doesn't need to ask her. He just enjoys company with her. That's the good thing.
She's such a fun character, too. Like, that's one thing I really noticed is how she's not so prim and proper as like other girls her age you might expect. She's just like,
I love
porno mags.
Yeah, exactly. That's the part that really occurred to me.
I guess it even starts before then, whenever Tomoya finds out that she's, like, reading a manga or something, and he's just like, what? Yeah.
Tomoya thinks, oh, she's probably reading some complicated science book, and then she starts laughing, this manga is fun. I also love her reaction whenever she asks Tomoya to have a lap pillow. It's like, you can see her breaking down and just wanting, I want to be pampered,
Yeah, that's a very different side of a character.
The voice acting was spot on, by the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As much as she loves helping others, she does crave that sort of attention from others. Like, yeah, I think that's what makes Tomoya so special, is that she's able to ask that of him. And again, I guess that comes like back to her brother, but yeah.
And it's like that theme of what goes around comes around, right? Where she's the happiness spiral. Which goes on to, you see that in other novels, but we won't go into that. But she's giving, and yes, she has friends, and you know, those people, her brother's friends or whatever, are good people. But in reality, she's not really getting much back other than just kind of nice company and having good friends, as far as we can tell.
Yeah.
So, the whole liking to be pampered thing is like, she's like, yes, my reward, you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
Ayukine gets hers, you know?
Mm-hmm. About that happiness spiral thing, like, people might be too quick to compare it to Komori's happiness spiral in Little Busters. I just want to come in and say, like, I feel that those are two different things. Because Komori's happiness spiral is like, you get enjoyment out of helping others, whereas with Yukine, it feels more like karma. Like, if you do good things will come back. And I think those are both
there's
valid.
There's a lot more depth to it,
thing,
too.
Yeah.
There's a lot more depth to it, too, because it doesn't have to do with just happiness. It's like, yes, you can be happy and share happiness, and then happy things come to you, but you can also be, you know, a sourpuss and be a shithead, and well, shitty things are gonna come to you as well.
So exactly. It is kind of like karma in that aspect.
This is very much a root of simple morals, simple but powerful morals that you know that Yukine likes to remind everyone of. Like, it's great that the focus of this root was on a small child and teaching him what it means to be a man, and so and so it kind of brings back these ideas of you need to treat others as you would expect to be treated. And
can we talk about how cool that scene was whenever Tomoya walks in on that like delinquent looking dude, and he's like, he immediately starts judging the guy based on what he's doing, and then he finds out that the guy is like telling him to go like save some kittens or something so he can get nice girls.
He should steal money to buy food for kittens. It goes into a lot of one of the main themes where, like, society likes to look at people as delinquents just because they do things like steal money, but they don't think of what they actually do with that money. Like, in this example, those guys are buying it for homeless kittens, and that's really admirable, you know?
In that, like...
Dude's mom, like, you know, kid misses school for a day, and she shows up, and she's just like...
Flips shit!
And she's just like, it's like, you scumbags, you made my little boy miss school, how dare you, there's nothing more important than school, therefore you must be bad people.
And I love how she doesn't say anything until Tomoya makes the note that she looks at Sunohara's hair, and that's when she's just like, you shouldn't be with these people. Like, she immediately is like, boom, makes that assumption just like that. It's like, so perfect. And then Yukine delivers the perfect line. Oh, my God.
I love that. I love that line.
I even tweeted it because it's that good. And I know Naoki Satin posted it. Canon said something about it, I think. But it's the, I don't think anyone who only knows how to obediently follow what others throw at them can become a decent person. absolutely perfect.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite themes from that discussion was, aside from that line, it's where she says that just because he skipped school doesn't make it a waste, because you learn so much other experiences by doing things other than going to school, and that's also exactly. Something of a very big value that you can get from around. This route has just so many different themes, and all of them are presented just so well.
That connects perfectly back to that statement still, because it's all very interconnected and thanks, Maida. It's all very interconnected and woven. Like, I love how in that statement you're talking about how just following, you know, the daily rigmarole and doing what you're supposed to do isn't necessarily going to make you a decent person, because yep. You're not going to learn about hardships and you're not going to learn about danger and then also just more experiences, because what you see through, like, the horse blinders of what, like, your parents might be wanting to make you do because they see you as becoming this specific existence that's like their spitting image of what you should become in some situations may not be exactly what you would be if you kind of had your own freedoms. So, like, I really liked the idea from a psychological perspective. I can't remember the exact details. I used the word imprinting. But, like, in childhood, how, like, a child may just learn these things based upon what their parents do and what their parents want them to do. Like, your parent may just raise you your entire life to go to medical school, even if you don't actually want to go to medical school, mm-hmm. but maybe you'll just grow up thinking that way because that's how they want you to think, instead of you going out and finding things for yourself and what you are actually passionate in. Andy. Very, very common thing in the world today.
Yeah, that's a very so true. Poignant.
Especially in Japan, mind you, where they are very, quote-unquote, obedient.
Business-oriented.
Yeah. Yes, I definitely agree. And that's kind of where the whole delinquent thing comes from, is these are people that have chosen not to be obedient to the whims of society and
follow now their they own are delinquents.
The term,
and that earns them their scorn.
It's like the term delinquent. I love how Yukine brings up the point that her parents called her brother a delinquent. Like, she makes it very, that whole scene is very important because it goes to, like, the higher-ups and the authority who are kind of guiding these children are labeling them as delinquents because they're just not doing what the adults want them to do. So it is coming up from that kind of hierarchy, right? Where, like, up above, they're upset because you're not doing what they want you to do because they are ordering you to do this. So immediately that makes you a bad person, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't think of... I think this might be a very Japanese thing as well, because I don't know about you, because where I grew up, they wouldn't be so quick to label you a delinquent if you just did that. Like, you have to actually commit crimes to be called a delinquent, but anyway.
And and kind of going back a step or two, I mean, you had mentioned that some of her brother's friends were labeled delinquents. And it seems like, you know, especially with some of the lines later on in the actual route, that, I mean, maybe some of those people just at that point in time in their lives needed some place to be.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there are several of them that kind of go on and say, hey, you know, I've started going to school, or I've started working, or I've got a family now.
Absolutely.
I mean, and it really shows that those people have developed beyond the need to, you know, go and find a group of people like themselves and just have that little niche. But whereas wherever they were in their life, it was something that they needed at that time. So
they needed it to grow. Otherwise, they would grow up to be silent businessmen who drink every night.
For all the misgivings of the anime, this is one theme which they did keep in there and addressed even differently, almost, with sort of the gangs and stuff, and how, like, they need a gang to have a place to belong.
Mm-hmm. It's like a kind of a... oh god, what's the word I'm looking for? Existential crisis.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, where, like, you're always just kind of... Are you living your life for you, or are you living it because of what someone else wants you to do, and kind of like...
Are you able to laugh freely?
Yeah, exactly. There was a line that said, there must be a freer way to live, and I think that was the point.
I keep saying this, and, like, it's... I know it just sounds crazy at first, but the more I think about it, the more it makes sense. I swear to God, this should be a Little Buster's route to me. I don't know why. Like, the way it makes me feel and the themes feels like what a Little Buster's route would be if it was my route a little bit better. Like, it's just, oh my god, this route makes me so happy. Mm-hmm. It makes me think a lot.
I wish we learned more about the delinquents, though, because, I don't know. We don't even know if they're, like, a gang or if they're just a bunch of friends or, I don't know. You can leave this out.
I guess that leaves something to be desired.
I guess you don't really have to know. It just, the only thing you need to know is they are labeled as delinquents. Like, if the VN labeled them as a gang, the readers wouldn't look at them the same way.
Yeah. It's like if you took Little Busters, and then you took, like, the Little Busters themselves, and then made it to where the school labeled them as, like, a delinquent kind of gang, because they're all a bunch of ruffians, right? But that's not the reality in that.
I could see Masato falling into this category very easily. But, like, young Masato?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
And I mean, they're all a bunch of roughhousers, so, like, it kind of fits. But that's, I don't know, I see that so much in this route, and the way it makes me think about, like, living your youth to its fullest, because it's very important to your future. There are a lot of skills and strengths and weaknesses that are very important to realize at a young age. And you're probably not going to actually realize that if you're just going to school and kind of being taught all the basics of what you're going to experience and blah, 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 whereas it's not necessarily true. Because
you gotta live life.
How many years did it take me until I realized I just didn't want to be a psychologist? Too long.
That's true.
My mother told me one of the most important things that I've ever been told in my life, and it's you gotta make your own mistakes. Like, you gotta go out there, and you gotta fuck something up, and then you'll know, like, okay, maybe this isn't what I want to do. Like, and that's something that you might not ever experience if you're just being told to do something and you don't have any other say in the matter.
I look up to your mom for that, because I think one theme in Japan especially is you should not make any mistakes, you must be perfect, and that's a very, as they call it, it's an Asian dad kind of thing, or Asian parent kind of thing, where if you make a mistake, you'll be scolded. So I think this route speaks a lot more to an Asian upbringing, where they are just so much more stricter about that kind of having to be perfect. Okay, what shed scenes did you guys get?
I got all of them.
Okay, nice. What about you, Biz? Nashes?
I think I did Tsunahara and Kyo. I don't think I had the time to go back and do all of them. Even though I wanted
Which
to.
One did you get, Biz?
I was able to do the Nagisa one. Oh, I didn't actually do any more because I didn't have time.
Seeing Tomoya get lewd with Nagisa was very weird.
Yeah. A lot of it was played for laughs. Like,
I did laugh really hard whenever he was just like, "All right, this is a way to break this curse." And he just thinks back and it's like, "Expose your ass." And he's like, "Oh my
you
god.
Have to go. Oh my god."
Really?
It gets pretty lewd at times, and it's also interesting how Kyo's scene is probably one less lewd than Tomoyo and Nagisa's scene.
Yeah. But
which is, I guess, you guys, most people remember that.
You guys need to fucking read the Akio scene, because
yeah,
we're probably going to talk about it briefly right now, but holy shit, what the fuck?
Yeah.
The whole idea is that he runs into Akio, and he's never met Akio before, but he knows that he is Nagisa's father, because that's who he thought of. Just on a whim, like, Tsunahara's like, "Bet he's thinking of someone's dad," and he's like, "Nagisa's dad. Wait, what?" And so,
And you have to have not met him, that's the key point.
Yes, because he basically appears like a mobster or something.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what the fuck. I think it's just Akio being Akio.
Mobster or someone who doesn't go home much?
Yeah, like, Akio just completely plays it up to be like, he's just, like, he never sees his daughter, and, you know, he's always involved with crime and keeping it a secret from her, and he just, and there's this really weird emotional scene where he's like, "Please tell my daughter that I love her and that I'm watching over her." And Tomoe's like, I promise to deliver your message.
I'll do it.
It's like... It's like this really serious emotional scene. It's just like, what the fuck? It's like the
is it using the
Yeah.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Of course.
It's just like, if you didn't know who Akio was, that scene would probably be very serious. But because you know who he
but
is...
But the fact, like, that you do...
Yeah, it's like, he's probably just fucking with Tomoya.
No, he's not. He genuinely wants to tell his daughter that, because he genuinely loves his daughter, and he's always watching over her.
The way they get out is not by him doing the curse-breaking thing.
Oh, he, yeah, that too.
Akio has an explosive, and he blows the door open.
What? Please, Akio.
Just, I don't know.
We got news from Helios that thing actually happens during the laser tag game. So it's Akio doing laser tag. Why does he have explosives during the laser tag game?
Does he have his sunglasses on?
Yeah, he has his sunglasses on.
yeah, it's laser tagging them.
I was thinking it might be something like that. Just fucking what?
Oh my god.
It's like,
I don't know, the comedy in this route is outstanding.
Amazing,
I think.
Yeah.
Canon put it perfectly because this route doesn't have like one of those really big, you know, overly dramatic hooks to it, and like no big huge conflict. There's a lot of room for them to keep it silly, and they did a very good job with that. It's so lighthearted.
The magic spells were like a good touch to get that.
The magic
to get
spells
that going.
Were all hilarious. You have lots of crazy choices and alternate paths and things, like the shed scene. And then you just have Sunohara just being Sunohara very, very frequently, and it's outstanding.
Yep.
Yeah, run around the school five times, find no one to talk to.
Hot the brick! Hot the brick!
Sunohara coffee is ready! That's my favorite line.
Yep. And
he's trying to get the girl, like he's trying to steal Yukine from Tomoya, but he's like just so far away from even being close to them having anything.
I mean,
he's just trying so hard.
He just has this whole thing where like he gets his hopes up. He's like, oh man, yeah, she views you as her brother. I got a chance, and then just like no,
he walks
not
in on
happening.
Her using him as a lap pillow.
I like how Tomoya
and heartbreak.
Tomoya's just like, oh, didn't he walk in whenever he was feeding Yukine? Like,
yeah, he was.
Sunohara walks in. Oh, the brain! He falls on the floor.
I like how that whole point he makes, like, we're going to do everything we can to make you laugh, Yukine. You know, like, he's really upping his clown role.
Oh,
I guess.
Yeah.
Clown
just
role.
To try and make it
well,
happy.
That's kind of like during the whole suspension thing, like, you know, they're having a moment, she walks out, and then suddenly here comes Sunohara crawling through the window of, how could I walk in during that? And then fucking home dude climbs out from underneath the table and is like, how could I come out from during that?
And he comes out right after Sunohara was saying, like, that loon shit, and he's just like, what were you saying?
He's like, yeah, like, I wouldn't be able to contain myself. He's like,
so,
what did you say about Yukine?
What wouldn't you be able to contain?
Grabs him
out the window.
Pulls him out of the window.
Oh, my God.
That guy is fantastic. Like, I'm really sad he didn't get a name or a sprite.
Yeah, his voice is really cool, too.
Yeah.
Cool, I keep thinking it's Midorikawa, but it isn't. Anyway.
I don't know where you got that impression, but whatever.
I don't know. I just got the guy.
I was calling him Masato. I don't know.
You guys.
I kept calling him Masato.
The only
thing I would say that I'm not sure if I liked or not about that guy is whenever he punched the shit out of Tomoya, even though Tomoya didn't even know what he was talking about.
Yeah,
but I guess he's given the don't make assumptions.
Yeah,
it was a granted. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, you're so quick to label him as a delinquent.
I did love how Tomoya was just like, I deserve that.
Yeah. Exactly.
He realizes his mistakes. He mans up and admits his mistakes. That's the difference between Tomoya and Sunohara. Well, it's like I said, it's not exciting, and I think a lot of people did notice that. A lot of people did notice that there wasn't any conflict.
It's not exciting, but it's plenty entertaining. I found this route very engaging.
Yeah. That's why I say boring is not the right word.
My take on it not being exciting is if you try to make it exciting, you get the anime version.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm pretty sure everyone agrees is far less good.
True. I mean,
kind of what the root it turns into is you have. I mean, Yukine herself is normally like a very, you know, quiet, reserved person. Tomoya isn't exactly outgoing and friendly. Yeah. So, I mean, you just kind of have those two developing a relationship with one another while Tsunahara provides comedic relief from the otherwise just two quiet people interacting.
That's a good way to put it.
And then, obviously, the random delinquents coming through the window and spicing things up.
I'll say right now it wasn't exciting, but I still think it is a very, very well-written route with good themes that are presented very well, and it didn't need to be exciting in order to present those themes well. It's just that comparing it to other routes, like, I couldn't get as sucked in as most other people. Like, a lot of people are saying that the reference room draws in, like, it draws you in, right? But it didn't draw
this
me in,
route,
you know?
Definitely relies a lot on Yukine's Moe factor, I guess.
Mm. It's a very slice of life route, and
my interest in the route is I just thought Yukine was a great character, so like I was attached immediately.
Oh, okay.
So I feel like the Moe draw, and I know Maeda said that in his with his character, his Moe take is that it's something that like he wants people to not get attached to the situation, but to get attached to the character and then react to the situation. Because it's the character that makes you the most interested. And that's the take that I got from this route, and that's what makes it so good. Like, anything could have fucking happened, but I just think Yukine is awesome. So
Yukine had the most amazing introduction, where it's just like, you know, asking for the coffee and getting it, and then asking for the rice omelet.
It's just like coffee? Sure!
The rice omelet, not getting it. Asking for a dance. Asking for a dance, and he agreed.
The dance was hilarious. That was funny.
Oh my god.
That was very classy. There's only because why not? That. What else would a man and a woman do in a room alone? Of course. Like hell I would do that. That was a very Yukito scene. That's a Yukito scene is what that was.
Yeah, I'd
imagine that was
Yukito. Channeling Yukito. Romance in this route was hella good, though. Like, a lot of people were saying
Yeah,
that
it was very natural.
Some people on the forum were complaining that it wasn't, that it just...
Yeah,
that
they
didn't
can't
feel...
tell the whether or not it's a brotherly love thing or if it's actually romance.
I thought it was pretty clear. It's like just how Yukino is like staring at him in his sleep and like leaning.
The way that they say these things, like the staring at them in their sleep, whenever he's like eating and she's just like glaring at him, and the way that she reacts to certain things, like whenever they're talking about whatever and she'll like get nervous or get embarrassed, very natural. And Tomoya does the same thing, actually. What was the other thing I was going to say? They do the classic romance, and this was in Minagi, too. I love the descriptions that they use, where Yukine asks... You can say that it starts whenever Tomoya can tell that Yukine is tired, but she says to him that she could tell he was thinking about something just from looking at his eyes. Like, that he was thinking about something. I was like, ooh.
Yeah.
Eyes are the windows of the soul.
You can cut through the intimacy with a butter knife.
I mean, yeah. The question was asked... The question was asked several times by an unnamed delinquent dude. He's like, what are you to Yukine? Well, he picked one hell of a way to show it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Pretty much.
Good job, Tomoya. It's interesting how he was kind of mauling over that. That was a small conflict that we have, but he was mauling over, does she really think of me that way? Should I think of her that way because of her situation? And then he just decides to go fuck it and kiss her in front of everyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have bro.
For that moment. And that was a good climax to that.
It's like, this is probably a death wish.
This is a suicide mission.
Yeah, that's what he said.
I really liked the... I do love that theme of the worries of endangering your relationship. And he like, is thinking really hard. He's like, do I want to go for that now? Because then I'm, endangering all that I have now, because things will just get awkward, and then I won't be able to go hang out anymore and stuff like that.
And we see after that, they still hang out pretty fine.
Yeah, even with Sunohara there, too, which is funny.
With Sunohara and you.
Yeah.
Sunohara's a bro.
And that's when they talk about the light.
Yeah.
Are we segueing?
Yeah, so that's like a scene that happens at the end, but it only happens once, because all the scenes so far revolving the light orbs are like one-time-only things.
Yep.
And so they give a little bit of exposition over the light orbs here and what they are. And so, since being the reference room, Yukine brings up that, you know, there's lots of books here mentioning the light orbs as folklore and how, like, no one can really explain them, but that they used to be seen everywhere and that they had some sort of relationship to happiness.
So I wrote this down because I know I won't be able to see it again. She said, the light balls have come to be associated with happiness. Many of them were seen when something good happened. And when they found something happy, the light balls would float around as if to watch over it.
Yeah.
This thing is so hidden, Helios actually just said, because he's listening live, he just said that he made a save in the epilogue and it won't work.
So you must only see it once. For it to work.
Okay.
Yeah. Because, like, there's certain things there that will be locked out if you don't have to save in the exact same place.
I just want to bring up, because I remember you guys were asking last podcast, why is it that with the Misaya route, you don't get her light in her route, but you have to get it in Tomoyo's route? And this is where I wanted to go to. This is what I wanted to bring up. That the light balls would only occur when they found something happy. And that implies a lot about the ending of Misaya route, where Tomoya comforts Misaya. It kind of implies that she's not really happy, that isn't what brings her actual true happiness. So I think these light orbs really require a true, genuine happiness. Like, in this route, for example.
It's still ambiguous, because, I mean, just looking at it at face value, you know, it is folklore and olden things, so maybe they aren't exact. Looking at it from a realistic perspective, but going even further, they're talking about how it's like love for the town, right? And Tomoya does say earlier in the route that whenever, like, it's actually just before you start the route, or maybe right as you start it, that he's really happy, that he found one thing that makes him happy in his daily life, is that he gets to go there, and he's actually really thankful for getting to go to the reference room. And he's like, weekday or weekend, it doesn't matter, there's just nothing to do, I'm bored all the time, but there's only one place where I can waste my time and have a good time, and that's the reference room. So he does have some place he can go to be genuinely happy. I think that's important, because Yukine brings up the idea of you have to truly love this town and stuff. But then it's even more ambiguous, because then it flips around where Yukine's like, well, why the hell can't I see them then?
I think I posted this somewhere, but I think Tomoya does genuinely love the town. And most people would... He says right in the beginning of the game, right, I hate this town. And the reason for hating this town is mostly because of his father. And most other people wouldn't say, I hate this town. They'd say, I hate my father. But I think that's why Tomoya cares so much for this town. It's like he wants the town to give him a good experience.
And that's how much he cares about this town. About the town. And it's. I said before that I would go back to the Maasai route again to bring up some interesting things that are kind of connected between these routes. And I'll bring it up in Tomoyo as well. So in the Maasai route, there's a specific scene where Katsuki looks up and he says, like, the cherry blossoms are beautiful. Like, it's random line, doesn't really have much of anything to say about anything that's going on, but he pays attention and brings attention to the cherry blossoms, and, like, that they're there in this, you know, in that background, in that scene. And then it comes up again as a major part of the Tomoyo route, and it's super important there. But then you go over to the in that route, and in another common scene, Tomoya talks about how, you know, he hates this town, he doesn't care, and he even, you know, makes a joke about, oh, I'm gonna cut down all these trees and get to school faster. But then whenever he sees Yoshino in common, he's like,
oh yeah,
why the hell are they putting this light up? That's pointless, that's dumb, it's always been this way. And he's like, why am I getting so mad about this? Because it's changing his town. Like, he doesn't like that change to his town. He's like, that's pointless to how it's always been. And it comes up again, you know, in the Tomoya route, where he's just like, there's no point, why would they cut down the trees? They've always been here, why don't they just leave them here, it's fine, and stuff like that. So Tomoya does have some sort of, like, attachment to the town maintaining itself, I guess. It's shown up a few times, and I guess it's shown here again.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess one potential way to look at it is that with most people, most younger people, you know, kids, teens, they like to have somewhere that they can call home, somewhere familiar that they can go to and be at ease, you know, be around people that they know don't judge them, aren't prejudiced, etc., etc. And, I mean, Tomoya really has lost that, the ability to call his house home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he has this, you know, intense, you know, nonverbal feud with his father. He doesn't like being there, to the point that he spends most of his time at Tsunahara's until he just goes home and goes to sleep. So, I mean, the town itself and some of the people in the town are, I mean, it almost seems like he's trying to find something else that he can replace that homely feeling with, and his potential, I mean, the reference room is one example, and he goes there, he finds some place he can go and just completely relax, be comfortable, completely at ease, there's someone there that he, you know, gets along with really well, and I mean, it can even go as far as the town itself, that, you know, sure, he hates this town, but, you know, the town is the one thing that he has looking that he can him, kind of...
He wants to, like, love it again, I think.
Looking at him as the delinquent who, like, roams the streets, like, those streets are his home. He's yeah. The streets.
Yeah.
So, like, I guess he basically just knows that town at this point, probably, you know, like, the back of his hand, and it's what he sees every day. So, outside of his home, you know, the town is his home, whether he generalize and dislike it because of his broad hatred or not. It definitely is special to him, whether or not he knows it or not.
Yeah. I agree. Hmm. Oh, but like Pepe said.
Okay. About the light orbs, going back to happiness, I guess now that we know about it, I will be pointing those out in the future podcast about how getting the light orbs are related to happiness. Like, in Yukine's route, you don't get it at the end of her route, you get it, like, right as she's done talking about her story. You get it before Tomoya kisses her. So that says a lot about what brings her happiness. And with Misae, you get it once she realizes that the cat is actually Ishima, and that's what brings her happiness. And with Tomoya out, you get it after Tomoya goes back with Tomoyo, and that's what brings her happiness. So the lights are strategically placed in the story.
So the questions remain. How does this connect to the world where all the lights are floating in the sky? And why is Tomoya so special? Many of these questions and more probably won't be answered in the next route, but they will be eventually.
Maybe not.
Join us next week for the Katomi Root Podcast, where we will talk about books and violins and strings and harps and delicious cooking.
Yes.
All these girls are great at cooking, aren't they?
Ain't got shit on my frozen rice pilaf.
Wow.
That's below the belt, Biz.
Special shout-outs to forum members Zach M, Yerian, Cannon, and Naoki Satin. You guys all did some awesome forum discussion. It was a little bit quiet this week, but obviously that's because it's kind of a quiet route, so it's perfectly understandable, and I feel like we all really agreed on most of it, so... not a lot to go into heavy arguments and discussion like with last route, but yeah, so shout-outs to you guys for keeping the thread alive. Until next time, guys, speedy Keanu Reeves!
Emitting pheromone.
Speedy Keanu Reeves.